welcome to the Quick Stop Entertainment Quick Cast series featuring filmmaker Terry Gilliam. Part 2.
Are you in some ways sort of reticent about spectacle? You seem to shy away from spectacle.
It was only like, and not really. It was just that there's been so much of it about recently. It just seemed there was a surfeit of spectacle every time you go to the cinema. Each thing is more spectacular than the last. And that was one thing with Grimm's. I was actually consciously not trying to compete on the level of Van Helsing and all those others. And excellent. I just try to keep it smaller, like a bit more old-fashioned. And a lot of people just said, well, it's not very spectacular.
I mean, no one can say that Tideland wasn't a reaction against what you were going through with Grimm in many ways.
But you know what's weird is that Tideland was a thing that we had written before Grimm's came along, so it would have been the same movie, I suspect, because I still went and made the same thing, but there was that sense of relief and release to be able to just run out and do something that was, fun and weightless compared to, what we had to do on Grimm's. When you actually consider on Grimm's, every day was costing $250,000.
And
a lot of money every day.
That's just, I can't even fathom that.
I know, and that's what you don't want to when you're doing it. I mean, I can't let that seep in, but clearly it is seeping in. I'm just like, shit, I've got a lot of responsibility here. So when we went up to Tideland, it was like, there's none of that stuff. There aren't, three units shooting here. There's not 300 people working on the film. The small, fast, it's going back to Fear and Loathing in a sense, just working instinctively and not having to worry about what it's going to cost or anything, because it wasn't going to cost much at all.
What I found fascinating was when you look at the on-set photos of Grimm,
yeah,
after you shot Tideland, that you had brought one of Jaliza Rose's doll heads with you as sort of a juju.
Actually, no, that's not after Tideland. That's before Tideland.
Was that before Tideland?
Yeah, this is what that's about. Is that there's this guy on Grimm who was brought in by the Weinsteins to be the man on the spot, the assassin if necessary. He was the guy that ultimately fired Nicola, or was responsible for getting him fired. And he had jokingly, because somebody else got the chop, it was the special effects guy got the chop, which we all agreed was the right thing to do. And so he gave me this little doll's head as a souvenir of the first head that rolled. And so I was wearing it around my head. My neck is what that was. And then he kept trying to give me another doll's head, which I wasn't accepting. I said, no, I'm not taking that, because I knew it was going to be Nicola who they were after. But that doll head is really the first special effects guy when he got fired, and he deserved to get fired.
So it's, well, maybe that's a...
See, the world gets more complicated. Doll's heads were intruding in my life long before Tideland got financed.
It's not exactly a symbolism. It's like sleeping with the fishes.
Yeah, it was a bit like that. But I do think there's something weird how these things, like you're reading into it a false meaning and a false history, but it's kind of interesting. Maybe it was happening like that. Maybe Tideland was being shot before that in some weird way.
I mean, it's weird. It's odd, particularly when you look at the role of the doll heads within Tideland, and that kind of omen coming in to the shooting of Grimm.
But this is what I always find weird about my films. I'm not sure whether they actually are in existence before I make them. There's too many things that happen in strange ways. And that head, you're right, when I look at the pictures, I'm wearing a doll's head, a severed doll's head.
I mean, I couldn't help but think, obviously, you're reading a timeline, going, well, obviously, that's after he did the film. Or...
Now, this is actually probably designed to confuse sort of film archaeologists.
Well, that'll be the name of the retrospective. They eventually, it was Terry Gilliam, Chicken or the Egg. So I mean, I can sitting, and dealing with it. Obviously, I've read Nicola's diaries.
Yeah,
and I can't imagine you as a director. Particularly with your past history in how things would get swept away from you,
right,
or torn apart by circumstance. I can't imagine you sitting there, in Poland, dealing with this.
I wasn't dealing with it very well, is the reality. I mean, you know about the bump on the nose.
No. Oh, yes, the bump on...
It was a little bump, like a Peter Sellers bump. It was a very small little thing. It wasn't like a big, stupid nose on him. It was just a little bump, and it made him really sexy. It made Matt's profile become like a young Marlon Brando. It was very extraordinary how this very small little thing took away that cute nose that he has and gave him a nose with character, with strength, is what it was. And to be caught in a situation where that was, it was a threat of the bump on the nose, or we close the movie, or you don't do the bump on the nose, or we close the movie down. I just wanted out of the film. And I found I was sort of dragged into the film ultimately because there were so many people dependent on me, and I stayed with it. And when, before Nicola got fired, I was still thinking there was a side of me that didn't want to make the movie. It was trying to find out ways of punishing the Weinsteins and all. And when he got fired, in the circumstances, they actually broke the rules of the DGA agreement by which we were supposedly working, despite the fact that DGA was not involved. And I thought, I was so excited by the fact that I finally had them over a barrel that, you know, I was, when I look back and read the diaries, Nicola's diaries, and read the whole thing, I thought, I was out of my fucking mind, because I was more interested in getting off the film than having, you know, a battle over Nicola. Because in the end, the reality is that Nicola is, the deal I had signed meant that if we reached an impasse between them and me, because we had equal votes, they had the final casting vote. And I was just, you know,
really equal at all.
It wasn't equal at all. I said, what was the point of doing a legal document based on that? It was bullshit. So they could do whatever they want. So the minute that I heard that they had fired Nicola mistakenly before they had a chance to sit down and talk to me, I thought, I've got the bastards. And all I was thinking about was how now I can really fuck them legally. That's how screwed up I was at that point. And,
I mean, had you ever gotten to that state in a film prior?
No.
I mean, even at the worst of Munchausen?
My battles were always at the end. They weren't at the beginning. And I was so wrong-footed so many times. And there was the other side was, I think I was far more desperate to make a film than I was imagining myself at the time. I was so desperate to work. On the other hand, and I really felt... I think what was happening to me was the battle over the bump on the nose when they threatened to close the movie down if I put the bump on Matt's nose. And it's a thing that still bothers me. What would I have called their bluff if I put the bump on his nose, and would we have still made the movie? And I don't know. And I think that was the moment I felt I could have lost a level of self-respect that I didn't challenge it. Bring it to the end, but Matt was so desperate to make the movie, and he said, look, and he shaded his nose and says, it looks all right, doesn't it, Terry? We've got to go to work.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to look at, you know, Nicola's perception of that, and, you know, talking about, you know, spineless Matt.
Yeah.
You know, well, of course he didn't stand up for it.
Well, I think Nicola's, actually, to be honest, I think he was unfair. He was really pissed off. I think Matt had argued so strongly at the beginning over Samantha Morton. He'd kind of, you know, burnt himself out. I really think what it was, because he had fought brilliantly for Samantha. And I think we all got worn out over that battle. Something actually Nicola was not involved in. So he was quite fresh by the time we got going. And then the nose thing, even though Matt loved it, wanted to do it, he wanted to do the film more, and he didn't want to call the bluff on that one. These fights had been going on for so many months before we actually started shooting. The reality was that I was kind of knackered by the time we started.
I mean, knowing how canny the Weinsteins have been in the past, I mean, do you feel that it really came down to a war of attrition, that this was a strategy as far as...
I don't know. Nicola was convinced that they were just trying to cut all my support off. You know, isolate me, because that was the only way they could control me. It's quite possible the way they think But there's other bits. I just think that Bob, who was supposed to be the producer, was sort of caught between me and Harvey, and being beaten up in both directions and didn't know quite what to do is, I think, also what was happening.
Please check back next week for the next part of our QuickCast interview with Terry Gilliam. www.quickstopentertainment.com